This is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 114, and this is going to be our Baker's Dozen recap. I'm Jonathan, and Matt is here with me.
Hey, everyone.
How you doing, Matt?
Excellent.
Hoping Brad will be able to join us, and RJ is having a date with his wife, and so we couldn't drag him away from that, and we wouldn't want to. But we are here to talk about the Baker's Dozen. It's been a little over a week since the shows, and I think we're all still digesting. I know I am. We did quick hits after most of the shows as they went on. So this episode is going to be a bit more of an overview. We've got some guests, and we've also got some clips to play everybody from the live podcast we did at the Fan Art Show on 729 at American Beauty.
You'll hear we spoke to a handful of folks that did all 13 shows, and it's kind of cool to revisit just very high level without having to go into the detail on each night, just what the overall experience was like. I think everybody, that from what I could tell, there was sort of this big afterglow going on after the Baker's Dozen, that everybody was just really just kind of re-energized and recharged and feeling happy from the run. And so it's cool to have kind of captured a little bit of that. But also it's nice that we can go back and also present something that a lot of people have been asking for who were not able to make it to New York. And that's a look at the HF Pod live event that we did at American Beauty, right?
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun. First of all, we should thank Pete, Fan Art Pete, for inviting us, to allowing us to crash his party and put that on in a corner, and thank everybody who came out and all of our guests. And unfortunately, the recording was not what we would have liked, so we decided that we'd best not put the whole thing out. But we have pulled some stuff, and what do you think? Should we get into the first bit?
Well, yeah, just to expand on that a little bit, for those of you who were not there, basically where we were, if you've ever been to American Beauty in New York, there's an upstairs kind of small bar area that we were in, which was awesome. I thought that we kind of did a nice job of making it feel pretty cozy with a bunch of couches and stuff like that. But the fact of the matter was that there was a bar in the room, which means that it was a bar atmosphere and a lot of loud chatting and enthusiastic,
I mean, people were having fun at a pre-Fish concert event.
And people were drinking and meeting up with friends, and it was a really good rallying point. It was so awesome to look around and see so many friendly faces that came out to see us. But that does mean that at times, as you'll hear on the recording, we were not exactly the center of attention. But that's okay, because I think that the main thing that people probably came out to see was our conversation with Tom Marshall, who was gracious enough to come out and join us. Tom kind of opened up about his own experience so far. This was after six nights of Baker's Dozen.
Right.
This was on day seven. Talked a little bit about that, but Tom also shared some great information about some of the new songs. And so I think that's why we really wanted to make sure that everybody got a chance to hear this. So what do you think, Jonathan? Should we go to the recording?
Yes.
We're going to have a quick conversation with a guy who you may know. His name is Tom Marshall. He has written songs for Fish.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Tom.
Wait a minute. Just let me say really quick, sort of in appreciation of you guys, this weird thing that's been happening, my wife and I were noticing, that I used to, you know, around a Fish show, especially in New York, anywhere three streets, three avenues away, start getting recognized, and people would say, "Hey, Tom, you wrote a great song or a great show, have a good show. Now it's all, Tom, I love your podcast. So I want to thank everyone who listens to Under the Scales. But a really important thing I have to say is behind the scenes, these guys helped. There would be no Under the Scales if it weren't for HF5. And I really want to thank these guys for the job they're doing. And thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. I remember, so a year ago, or a year and a half, I forget. More than a year ago, Tom and I met at The Man, and then we started talking, and I was like, hey, I have a fish podcast. And you were like, yeah, I know, I've heard of it, I've listened. I'm thinking about starting a podcast. Do you think that would work? And I'm like, well, I mean, yes, it would work. And like, you should absolutely do it. And that was the only conversation we had, and then he did it. Now, we talked a lot.
That was the only obstacle. After that, it was just smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing.
So well, thank you for that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about how Under the Scales is going, what's coming next, experiences, learning, etc. I think we're going to kick it off by talking about the tour and songwriting and some of the songs that have been debuted that you and Trey wrote recently, but also this kind of line that's blurring between Tab and Fish, and you're seeing more of this stuff kind of come up in the shows. Start with either of those points, but we want to hear your take.
Sure. The Tab is becoming kind of an incubator for songs that eventually show up at Fish. And I was thinking, like, back about that maybe First Tube was the first one that happened with, and possibly Sand, you know, just when it was a trio, Tony, Russ, and Trey, and then suddenly Fish was playing it. And then I was thinking there's, like, a new thing that's happening now. It's kind of a new era. It may have started with Pigtail, but ever since then, it's kind of like Trey and me, if I'm lucky, write a song, and it kind of goes to Tab, and then if it's good, goes over to Fish.
not that the other ones aren't necessarily good.
No slight to the other songwriters or songs or anything there. Just sometimes there's like, I think it's like a democracy these days, especially when there's an album involved in getting a Fish song to become a Fish song. Trey doesn't face that sort of vote thing when it comes to Tab. He just shows up at practice and says, all right, dudes, here's the songs we're going to play. And so if he has 10 new songs, because it used to be Trey would show up to Fish with 10 new songs and they would just play them. Now it's like, well, I have a song and, you know, I don't know, maybe Trey, you should only debut 3 songs or something. It's not that contentious, but, Trey, for whatever reason, likes to have a blank canvas, and Tab is his blank canvas, and that's how it's turning out to be.
Well, I think that's working pretty well. We've seen some good stuff come over.
I love it because it kind of, in a way, means more of my songs, you know, they don't have to run as tight a gauntlet anymore. They sort of can become a song over here or over here.
So there have been 2 songs this tour that are new.
Everything's right
and Threat.
Well, Leaves too, but Leaves, that wasn't played by Tab though. You're right.
Okay.
Everything's Right, and then 2 new songs, Threat and Leaves so far.
Right. So let's talk about those a little bit, could we? I'm particularly a fan of Threat.
So I tweeted this because someone figured it out, but I don't think it's been announced publicly. So I'll announce it, that Threat is Steam Part 2. I don't know if you like the real heads might know that, but basically continues the adventures or misadventures of the poor guy that melted into the snow in Steam. And, Thread finds him, like, there's a lot that might need to be explained. You probably can't glean just from the lyrics, but basically it's a guy who fell in love with this woman up in the tower. She gets killed. He and she are spirits in Steam, and it ends. And then Thread begins, and he's kind of languishing on a cliff while she went away on a mission of revenge. And we don't know how much time has passed, but he all of a sudden is awakened by a thread that she sends him for help.
Well, I'm all about this new mythology you're building. So do you have any more in this vein?
It's going to be completed. There's going to be it's a trilogy. It's going to be completed by Thread, well, Steam 3, which is going to be called Epitaph, as you guys might have guessed.
Awesome.
So let's talk about Everything's Right, because I know at the was that at this acoustic show in Northampton when he said Tom and I just felt like this needed to be said or something along those lines. Trey said that when he first played it, or maybe it was with Tab. But I know you guys wrote that in the spring, and it's it it clearly is communicating a response to the angst of the times in a lot of ways, but was that the intention going in?
Yeah, so we wrote that in Spring Lake, Jersey Shore, in March. And
we got a lot of Jersey Shore fans in the house.
Down the shore. So that was also Thread and Leaves were written there. And Everything's Right becoming, from writing to becoming a song, a tab song in this case, that might have been the quickest turnaround ever for a song to actually immediately be debuted that I can think of. Now I forgot the question.
Did you write it about in response to the angst of the times in, I don't know, thinking about where we are politically, culturally, environmentally, et cetera?
It may have come out that way, but I didn't sit down and intend it to be that way. Actually, this was a song kind of at the end of our writing session. So I've described before, but for those of you who don't know, Trey and I usually set aside 3 days and we go away. And he has people bring in instruments and recording equipment and then close us into the house for like 3 days and we try to write as many songs as we can. So I usually come prepared with lyrics, and in this case I had 17. So we went through all of them and we were done, and you know, Trey said, we still had time, so Trey said, just write one now, and I said, what about, you know?
Just write one now.
Yeah. Should I just write one now? Is that what you're saying?
About this. And then Fish can play it tonight.
That'll be the quickest turnaround ever. He kind of just said, write it about, you know, waking up and what you think kind of thing. And so I did sort of put myself in the mindset of a guy with, you know, thinking about the current climate, possibly politically, possibly just someone stuck in a rut, you know, losing his hair, looking in the mirror, like, you know, there must be something more than this.
Hey. Try not to step on your best friend's feet.
To step on your best friend's feet.
Tom, I wanted to ask just about your experience. You've been to more than one of these Baker's Dozen shows. Talk about your experience with, like, the energy in the room, everything else that everybody's been talking about. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I really loved, like you guys have already mentioned, the jam-filled night. When they kind of took a right turn, sample in a jar, when they made it through the chorus and everyone's waiting for, I wheeled around and they just left turned into a jam, I immediately understood jam-filled. Like, oh, okay, they're going to throw a jam into every single song. Who knew that there would be a 30-minute Lawn Boy right after that? That was amazing. I don't think Lawn Boy has ever been that jammed out. Some people said Lawn Boy became a lawn man that night. But I disagree. He's still a boy.
I think that kind of answers my next question. You've remained unspoiled. I know that you've said on your podcast you don't like to know too much so that you can't accidentally or can't give it away. Have you done that with this tour, this run?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's nothing. I would never go and say, hey, Trey, what's the flavor of donut like for next Saturday or something like that. This one's different. Like, there's not really secrets apart from maybe the donut flavor.
Staying out of the rehearsal room backstage and stuff?
Staying out. Although we did go, you know, we went and saw. And one of the rules they usually observe about sound check is sound check songs aren't often played that night. We went to a sound check and they played every song that night, including Reba and the two Coconut songs. And so it was a great sound check. And then I quickly realized, oh, they're using this for rehearsal and I don't want to know. So I haven't gone to any other sound checks.
Yeah, well, I know they played Soundcheck Kick Out the Jams the other night, but they did not play Kick Out the Jams, so...
Well, they knew you were listening.
I wasn't there. I read about it on the internet.
They'll throw in some shit if they know someone's listening.
I believe that. So I mentioned the podcast. You've mentioned the podcast Under the Scales. Do you want to... you know, how's that been going? Obviously, you're getting, you know, a lot of people seem to be listening. People recognize you for that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Basically, I way overbooked myself. Everyone's in town, right? So I thought, oh, what a great opportunity to interview everyone that's in California that I've been wanting, you know, that's on my list. And it turned out, like, I'm 53 years old, and I actually need to sleep. And I even also had a an amphibian. That's my band from a long time ago. I even had a mini amphibian reunion where I had to prepare. Right. And I sang four songs for the first time since 2009 with them. So, like, on top of everything, I went to my first after show, like, in 20 years probably. And so it started weighing on me. I started canceling stuff, and I'm a lot calmer today. But basically, the rule and the takeaway is I'm focusing on fish and having a good time, and I'll just rather travel to California and interview them there than try to do everything at once. Don't mix business with pleasure.
It's a pretty good reason to go to California. So what can we look forward to in the podcast coming up? Is there anything you can tell us about?
Yeah, so one of the ones I canceled was Jen Hartswick, which I'm sorry about.
What?
Yeah. And yeah, I know, she's so awesome and so friendly. Her feathers were unruffled, and she promised me, like, almost immediately when we're in the next city that's going to be remedied. I did have a great interview with the two pillars of the poster. It doesn't like peas for some reason. I'll
popping
do
peas.
My peas as bees. Is that okay? the boaster community. and that would be Jim Bollock.
And that came out well.
When you listen back to this.
And Dave Welker. And so I interviewed them in Dave's studio in Soho, surrounded by Dave's unbelievable art, Dave being the artist who did the Rift cover album. And he finally explained to me on the podcast, live on the podcast, sort of live at the time, exactly what everything meant. I never knew, for example, where Fast Enough for You was represented in the art, but every song's in there, he claims. One of the explanations was still shaky as far as I was concerned, but the only one that he says is not in there is Horse Silent. But I found every other one. I did. I wrote Fast Enough for You. I wrote a lot. I think I wrote 9 of the songs on Rift.
Can you get them to play tonight?
The entire album? Cinnamon, Rift, no problem.
So I know you have a lot planned for Under the Scales, and I think we should, if you're up for it, take a couple questions from the audience.
Oh, good.
One thing I just want to mention first is because people who are here are mostly, I think, fans of music and podcasts. Tom and I have been brainstorming over the past several months. We've tweeted pictures of ourselves brainstorming about sort of podcasting and where music podcasting can and should go, and kind of joining forces to think about how to keep awesome podcasts coming and new podcasts and that sort of thing. I don't know what you'd add about that.
Sure, I could add, if you guys are contemplating doing a music podcast or have a music podcast and you haven't spoken yet to RJ or myself, please do, because we sort of, in the way that RJ helped me get off the ground, we'd like to get a bunch of music podcasts off the ground. We realize that there's some kind of strength in numbers thing that we're trying to harness a little bit here. Music podcasts and small podcasts face very similar obstacles. We've gone through it, and I think there's some power there, and we're trying to figure out how to utilize that, how to get everyone sort of empowered in that regard.
So Tom and I are going to be continuing to think about that, and we'll tell you all about it as we put some really concrete thoughts together. Just by way of example, I'm so proud of Jonathan for launching his podcast, Broke Down Podcast. Which is so good, and he's so good at it because you give the context and the history, and I think you've taught us, me and Brad, and probably others, a lot about how to do a podcast right. Also, Dave Goldstein and Brian Brinkman, who you probably all know, started a podcast called Beyond the Pond. If you haven't heard of that podcast or you haven't seen it, you should check it out. It's about taking specific pieces of fish improv and spinning them out and telling people about new music. Every time I listen, I learn about 15 new bands I've never heard of, and these guys are like savants of indie music and other music. So anyway, those are two podcasts that we've sort of helped, you know, help people think through and that sort of thing. And I don't think Mike's here, Lawn Memo, he just launched a podcast about the Buffalo based jam band Aqueous. And so we've talked to him and helped him out. So we're kind of starting to help people launch these projects. So as Tom said, talk to us if you have an idea. The one thing that I think we've learned is the more niche, the better, you know? So if you have a very, very specific podcast idea, that's good. You don't have to do a podcast about the great outdoors.
Or music. Like, or music. Music in general.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, can we take a couple questions? Are you cool with that?
A couple questions.
Let's do it.
All right, let's take a couple questions for Tom from the audience. Brad, you make a great mic.
Tom, I love the podcast. It's wonderful. I meant to email you about this question ahead of time, but maybe you're already thinking of it, and I apologize if this is something that's been discussed already, but under the scales as episodes as it relates to Baker's Dozen, I was wondering if you thought about doing an episode or a couple episodes just with fans who are doing all 13 shows and discussing how it affected their mind, their spirits, their wallets, all of that stuff. So,
not bad. No, just because of the reason I told you kind of before, like I'd scheduled a lot, but I am doing something live with audience members at Dick's because I'm going to my first Dick's ever, and
we love Dick's.
Apart, we do. Some of us more than others. and I'm leaving the schedule open apart from figuring out something cool to do with fans, and I'm not quite sure what that is, but the Dude of Life suggested that we just troll the lots and talk to people and put it out on tape with no editing and see what happens.
That's very risky. I look forward to it.
Hi, is this on?
Yes. Say your name.
My name's Ryan. I'm from Washington, D.C. I'm up for these three shows this weekend. And I've been following along the whole, you know, run so far on Live Fish and so forth. So it's like watching a TV show for a while and being really into it and then, like, getting to go see the show, you know. I've been really excited to come up this weekend. So, Tom, my question for you is, and I'm a big fan of both your podcasts. Tom,
thank you.
As the lyricist for so much of the material in the band, how does it make you feel, you know, how does it make your ego kind of feel when 30, 40 minutes go by with none of your lyrics being sung and it's people's favorite show of all time all of a sudden?
So angry, you're right. That's just absolutely just steaming by the time they finally sing my words again. You're right, I'm just absolutely pissed off. No, I am more a song lyric guy than a jam guy. You know, you're kind of actually exposing me as a, you know, a song guy versus a jam guy. These are all jam guys if you want to know what they look like. I'm a song guy, which means tall with gray hair. No, of course. I'm watching my best friend up there kicking ass, you know what I mean?
So I'm Seth, also from D.C. How's it going?
This will be our
first
will be
of all, Tom, thanks for all the music that you've given to us. You know, it's changed so many of our lives, so thank you for that. You mentioned the third part of the Steam trilogy, Epitaph. I just wanted to know kind of where that is in the songwriting process and maybe if that's something we should be on the lookout for over the next week or so.
Well, since you asked, and thank you for asking, as you might understand, there's sort of more going on in my head, you know, than you can sort of glean from the lyrics. So I'm sort of envisioning something other than just the songs. But my first goal was to get Trey to come out and make them three Fish songs. And he's 100% behind that now after 10 years of pushing, kind of. So I'm really happy about that. But yes, Epitaph will sort of conclude, I think, possibly, the trilogy. But in a way that's going to require a little bit more explanation. I'm going to build the story more, possibly in a book or something. We're working on it. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That was a good question.
Thanks, Tom.
I should have asked that. So I think we're going to let Tom take a break. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you, guys.
For joining us.
Thanks so much.
Real pleasure.
Yeah. very cool. And again, thanks to Tom for joining us. And I hope you guys all dug listening to that. So we're going to get into the next portion here. So as we mentioned, we had a few guests on. We had Joseph Simon, Zach from Cherry Hill, and Diana, who you guys all know, Diana with two N's, has been on many times with us. And they all attended, I think they all attended all 13 shows. And
that's right. Yeah.
And so we asked each of them the same questions, and we're going to play bits of their answers, and we're going to take on those questions ourselves. So the first question was, what did you learn from this experience of going to all 13 shows about yourself and about Phish? And so we'll hear a little bit from them and each of them, and then when we come back, we'll talk about it ourselves.
This was beyond the music. You know, 2.5 weeks of my life that I'll always remember. The human spirit, really, those two words, human spirit, they just pop out at me, because the people that I've met, you know, Jeff Friedman, he was my partner in crime the whole time. I met people all around the world. Their positivity, their kindness, people sharing, you know, oh, you look like you're thirsty. You need some water. Here, have a water. Have some of my water. You know, I don't smoke cigarettes, but I wanted a cigarette. Hey, do you have a cigarette? Someone gave me 5 cigarettes. You know, that's what I mean. Really, here, take five. That's the spirit. It's like this solidarity, positive human spirit about these Phish fans.
So I definitely learned, or was reminded again, I should say, maybe of the power of Phish and the spiritual side of the music. And I'm not exactly someone who's religious by nature or anything, but just the spiritual side, there's something there. It's the scene, the people, the hype and the antics, you know, the playfulness with the crowd and the interactions they have with the crowd doing themed nights. It really is unlike any other band. And there are so many elements of doing 13 that became so different from every other, Phish run for me, let alone any other concert run. It was, I had the same seat. I requested the package, so I had the same seat actually every night. And I basically became like friends with these 7 to 8 people who were there every single night. We became, within 2 days, we're trading stubs, getting friends and wives down there, and, you know, calling each other by first name, seeing each other outside and high-fiving. There's really like, there is something so unique and special about Phish that brings people together. And there is this genuine love and something there that I don't want to get too emotional or, too frou-frou, but it really is something very special and pretty unique that I think seemingly only the Grateful Dead, and I know that from my parents, who were two Deadheads, seemingly something that only they were able to really create, I would say.
They were working their asses off during this run, and it showed, you know. But still, despite, you know, all the hard work that it went into it, you could tell they were just having a blast, and it was so much fun. That, yeah. There was so much laughter and smiles and silliness. That was one thing that I came away from it.
Excellent. So you can hear there, you know, what I was talking about before, about sort of the afterglow of the Baker's Dozen and everybody really taking a lot of positivity there away from the entire experience. The community, the connectedness, the sharing. One of the things that I thought was really cool in a bunch of the conversations we've had, including some of the quick hits, was hearing people that had the same neighbors all 13 nights and how they really all got to know each other. And by the end, it was like they had, you know, established a little bit of a mini tribe mentality and whatnot in their section. So that was really awesome. Right.
I thought that was great. I discovered that myself on the night 7 after our thing in American Beauty. I was just there for the one night until the final weekend, excuse me. And so I had a single seat that I'd picked up a little late and kind of was surrounded by people I didn't know, and they all knew each other. and not because they were in a massive group of 40, but because they had been seated together for six shows, now seven shows at that point. And I thought that was just amazing community building by the band or whoever handled the tickets or, you know, whatever. Somebody put a conscious thought into putting all these people together. And if they didn't, the net result is the same, is that these people grew together and shared this experience. And what a hell of a thing it was.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I liked, I was thinking about, you know, what Diana said about the band working so hard. I don't know if you saw Mike Gordon's been doing a bunch of Q&A the last couple of days on Twitter, and he made a comment.
He answered one of my questions.
He did. Yes. I saw that. That was awesome. So he made a comment about how something to the effect of, you know, what did you learn from the Baker's Dozen? And his comment was like how much practicing for hours a day, how it can affect your playing. Presumably because they were learning so many new songs, but, Diana kind of echoed that in talking about how apparent it was that the band was really, really working hard. And you know, how that work paid off, and you know, the level of playing that they were, you know, experiencing all night or doing on each show, but also how connected they were. And you usually see that towards the end of a tour where that, you know, they've spent the last month together, and they're really just sort of in lockstep. But they had that from the get-go in the run, and then it just exponentially increased each night, really.
Yeah, it really did. But it was amazing how, like, early they were there, and it comes from that work, you know, in the practice room or wherever the hell they were doing all that rehearsing. And of course, the rehearsing before a tour, you know, I think it's maybe arguable that, you know, First Night of Chicago might not be the best show, might be like the one of the weaker shows they did this summer. But really, once they got their feet wet, they were full on through the rest of, you know, almost all the shows. And the work shows. And I think not just the work of the playing, but also the overall commitment to the experience that they were bringing for everybody, with the donuts and the themes and the just, it was, you know, the biggest festival perhaps ever.
We've mentioned this a number of times on the Quick Hits and whatnot. It really just felt like this summer's festival, and that it was a 17-day event that a lot of different people got to come in and out to. I was trying to place the feeling that I had after the shows that I saw, and I think the closest that I've come in recent history was after Magnum Ball, you know, just feeling like the community had really come together and was creating something wonderful. So
right, and I've definitely had that before, and when we were walking out of MSG after the final show, you know, after On the Road Again and all that, and we were kind of overwhelmed with the emotion and, you know, in the room and as we walked out of there. And it did, you know, it also reminded me of, you know, that kind of post-festival glow, because, you know, they just did something, you know, they just accomplished a significant thing. And it may not be significant to anyone else in the world outside of our community, but it doesn't matter, because we all know it was big.
Yep. Yep. All right. So maybe we should pair up some music with this discussion. What do you think about
that? Yeah, sure. So I have a note here to play what I like to call Roger. Other people call Rogue. I don't know. I think the latter is correct, but I'll still call it the former.
We'll let it slide for you. So, all right, let's listen to the Roger Gay from Baker's Dozen.
Thank you. suns and mist. Provoking dreams that don't exist. A circus of light where dreams can take flight. Thank you.
That was the Rogue from, hey, I said it right, from Madison Square Garden. And I don't know, that you might have just heard my cat. And that was actually from 722, in case anybody is unsure. I know there's so much music here that it's really hard to know some of these things, except for the couple obvious big ones. You know, it's kind of hard to string them together. So that would have been the Strawberry Donut Night, in case anybody's wondering.
Okay.
And I really like that.
Yeah, it was good. So one of the things that you may have seen us doing over the course of the tour was asking you all for your submissions for haiku reviews of the shows. And one of the things that we did at our HF Pod Live event was Jonathan had accumulated some of those and read some of them to the live audience. And so just as we did during that event as a little bit of an interlude, we'd like to present to you a some poetry readings. This is, we'll call this the HF Pod Slam Poetry.
Slam poetry is the worst.
Presented, read eloquently by our own Jonathan. So let's hear what that sounded like.
There it is. So I'm going to read you a few. We had some good ones when we first announced it. The tour hadn't started. And we did. I got some from Stephen Grip, who's at SJG042578, which I don't know what those numbers mean. It's not a dead show date, so it really doesn't mean anything to me. But they were predictive of shows, so I thought I'd include a couple of those. So the first one is House Lights Vanish, Then Bright Chasms of Color, Then Sample in a Jar. He was predicting something. I don't know. First set, Big Boat Tunes, A Lighthearted Reba Jam, Antelope Closer. So I got into it with him a little bit. Second set, Tweezer, The Jam Gets Pretty Crazy, Then Drops Into Bug. I don't know how y'all feel about that, but I would like that. It would be okay. And then we jump ahead. Two sets have flown by, RJ Karate Chops Me, First Tube Encore. That's signature move. Okay, so then we got into Chicago, and they started playing some shows. And I've got one from Chicago 1. This is from at I Had a Dog, Joe at I Had a Dog. He writes, breezes from the north, clouds parting, everything's right, LEDs no more. So that's for all you lighting show fans. And then our friend Matt Burnham writes from Chicago 2, there was a simple played in Chicago last night. Put it on the chart. That's a note for Scott, I think. And then at Fish Talmud says, hope is in the air. Anything can happen because we've got a band. I think that's a Fish reference. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'll give you a couple more and then we'll move on. From Chicago 3, at Fish Melts Faces writes, Fish Carini Heat, my bladder about to burst 20 beers later. I like that one too, yeah. And then some guy named at MDPHUNK, I don't know if he's trying to say he's a hunk or he spells funk wrong. Oh, okay. Carini, simple, heady jams early in tour. The lump is fake news. I thought everybody saw the lump. Isn't that how it goes? And then the last one I'll give you from Dayton, from at Thaddeus J. Struck. Watched Dayton webcast. During set two, my dad says, wow, a song with words. Awesome. Thanks to everybody who sent those in. We have some more later on in the show.
All right, Jonathan, thanks for your excellent poetry readings at American Beauty. The crowd may not have completely appreciated it, but I know that I definitely did. It was cool. And thanks to everybody who sent them in. We got a lot of really cool submissions, and it was nice to see people kind of putting their heads around that in response to our request.
Yeah, there was a lot of really good ones. There were a lot of really silly ones. And there were good silly ones that maybe didn't make the cut just because I couldn't read everything. And so if you don't hear yours, we do have another segment to play. But if you don't hear yours, it's not a negative review that I didn't read it because I just couldn't read them all. In fact, I had several pages worth of stuff up there, and I – did not read all the ones that I had printed, much less all the ones that were submitted. It was a lot of fun to go through those. And if people want to keep sending them, maybe we'll bring them back another time.
On to our second question that we asked our 13 club representatives that we talked to. And that was, what was the biggest surprise over the course of the 13 nights? And was there any sort of peak moment for you? So let's check out what our guests had to say in response to that.
You know what really kicked my ass was Starman. I think that that was out of nowhere. I mean, I know they're doing Bowie. I know they did Moon Age Daydream, which really kicked my ass. But Starman, it was out of left field. My heart exploded. I mean, these people, everybody was on fire. Starman is a very dear song to me. And it's like my brain, my heart, everything just melted.
You're a Bowie fan then, I guess?
I'm a huge Bowie fan, yeah.
Nice, nice. How about your band? I know you've got a band. You guys play Bowie or Fish, or like, what's the deal with that?
You know, we're very Fish influenced. I responded to an ad on Craigslist, and you know, they were like looking for a bass player, very Fish influenced. Mercury Matinee, we're right out of New York City. We're playing shows all the time. You know, we have the Facebook, Instagram, Mercury Matinee, and we're kicking ass.
I think the biggest thing, at least, I guess I would say two things. The biggest thing song-wise, like song selection-wise, would have been 1999. Out of all things and the Bust Outs, that was what I least expected out of everything. Like Cinnamon Girl, if you know, thought about it, kind of made sense. Certain other covers made sense. Strawberry Letter 23 made sense, which I also love that song. But 1999 was definitely the biggest surprise for me. I was up in the Sky Bridge for that, and people were losing their minds, I would say. It was pretty wild. And then other than that, what I was really surprised at is Trey's playing seems to be lifted, I guess. It seems to be... There were moments, and so I will caveat for 1 second and say I'm a musician. I'm not a guitarist, but I'm a musician, so I can appreciate certain things in a different way, maybe a slightly nerdier way than other people appreciate them. And I have to say that his playing seems to be, there are moments where I like can close my eyes and I like question, am I transported to 1997? And I'm not saying the whole show sounds like that. I wouldn't say that, and it's not true to me. But there are moments where I'm just like, oh my God, you know, I just floored. My jaw was on the floor, and my face was off of my face. And I was really just like, I'm experiencing a level of seeing Trey play that I have never seen in my one show of 2.0 and all of my 3.0.
I don't think if you ask the majority of fans, anyone was upset to have missed a specific song, because it was just as exciting to see what other songs they'd bust out and how those traditionally non-jammed songs would get treated, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that was one of my biggest surprises as well, not just, you know, at the jam show where Lawn Boy of all songs got, you know, treated to an epic jam treatment, but just, you know, how other songs that are traditionally not the biggest jam vehicle, like Breath and Burning, you know, most people whine about that Trey song, and I think after this go-around, they'll give it, you know, a little bit more of a chance. They're not going to groan as much when it starts.
Man, it sucks when you have to listen to your favorite band play songs that they like, you know? It's tough. It's a tough situation.
Okay, so some great comments there from all three. And, you know, that's... I'm not sure I've given enough thought to this question to answer it myself, Matt. What would be your answer?
I was thinking about it two ways. I think from a macro perspective, like we talked about before, just that the whole event felt like one. And I'll admit, I was a naysayer coming into the whole summer. I didn't think that they would try to do no repeats. And it's amazing that they did it. I think that's why I'm so surprised. And it was very obvious, you know, even probably by the Dayton show, that it was probably going to happen. But I really, you know, for the months leading up to that, I said, no. They'll never try that. It's just going to be like a tour, but instead of being a bunch of different venues, it's just going to be all in the same room. And, you know, so we'll get like, you know, maybe 3 tweezers and 1 yam, you know, just kind of like you typically would for a 3-week run. So that was a surprise, you know, looking at the whole run. If I had to pick a moment or, you know, one thing that they did that really, really surprised me, it was probably the Everything in Its Right Place. I'm, you know, a huge, huge Radiohead fan, and I never, ever, ever in a million years would have thought that they would have tried to play a Radiohead song. And if they had, I mean, you'd figure it would have been something from, you know, the Bends or In Rainbows or something that's a little bit more like a rock and roll band, right?
Or Creep, right? You know, that's too obvious, and they'll leave obvious alone at times, unless it's Cinnamon Girl, which is super obvious, but they had to do it.
Yeah.
But
let me ask you a question. What do you think about this, just as a small diversion? I felt like in the beginning they were doing the obvious thing, like right on the nose, Strawberry Fields, you know, Powder Finger, Cinnamon Girl. But then by the end, they started to get more obscure with the references. And I don't know if that was just because they had more time to dig into cool things to do, or if there was a little bit of misdirection going in there. What did you think about that?
I just think that you can't predict fish. So even when you can predict fish, and once you think you've got it down, you're just going to be wrong. So, Cinnamon Girl was obvious. Strawberry Fields Forever was kind of obvious, but Strawberry Letter Number 23, I mean, I know people who guessed that beforehand, but I would say it is far from obvious. And you know, I just was so appalled by the guess, actually, when a friend of mine, Charlie, predicted it. I was like, that's crazy. You should just turn off your computer and go home. He was home, but I was just almost offended by the craziness of his guess. And so, of course, he was right. So biggest surprise, possibly the no repeats, but I kind of believed they would. I kind of knew they would do it. I think probably it's more that the confirmation that if fish wants to go long, they can. At any given time. I've long suspected it and also often doubted it. But, you know, there it is. They can do it if they want to.
When they want to, absolutely.
And so as far as peak moment, I don't know. There are a lot. So I love the... I love the Drowned. I love the jam that become Mr. Completely jam that becomes 1999. I loved and this might be it, outside of maybe everything I was in attendance for, Mercury when it rolled back into You Sexy Thing. When they started to jam out of Mercury, I was like, oh my God, they're jamming out of Mercury. And then back to You Sexy Thing, that is just outstanding music. I loved Blaze On into 20 Years Later. I think that was just I could go on. There's so many highlights, and I think that maybe that's it. Maybe it's because every show has something that I could say, ooh, that, and it's not like a little something. There are big somethings on every night. And that's possibly without precedent, certainly in a long time, they haven't been that consistent.
I wonder ever, right? I mean, is there any other famous era when you can't find any off nights?
When I started seeing this band, every night seemed better than the last. So I would say in 94... That would probably be it. I mean, 94, 95.
because I was thinking even 97, you know, in fall 97, you had, you know, the Bryce Jordan Center show, for example, that was, you know, probably the dud of that whole run, or, you know, even.
But if you put that up against something from just a few years ago, people would be like, oh, yeah, that's the shit.
Well, so, yeah.
It's all relative, too.
It is relative. But I mean, within the context of that tour, you could probably say, like, yeah, if you were going to miss one, that was probably the one to miss. But I mean, like, you wouldn't have wanted to miss any of these nights. I mean, all of them were good. There's none that I can think of that I would be like, it's probably okay if I didn't go to that one or didn't see that one.
I haven't heard from anybody who did all 13 and regrets doing all 13.
Yeah.
Not a one.
Yeah.
So that should tell you something.
Yep. I know one person who decided to not do one night to rest, and he's regretting it.
See, there you go. I mean, I understand why you might make that decision in the moment, because fish shows, they can be demanding.
They wear you out. I'll tell you what, I was exhausted after this entire experience, and I did 4 shows in the middle, and I couch toured all of them. And I had to sleep a lot after the last show, just from, you know, watching at home and staying up and being so excited and talking to people about it and everything like that, let alone, you know, having.
Well, you did on a couple Saturdays that you weren't in attendance, you like went out to a show and then came home and watched the fish show.
That
makes for late nights.
Yeah, getting to bed at 4:30 in the morning and then your daughter waking you up at 7:30 is rough. So I was there with those late night ragers. I was doing it. So all right, well let's listen to a musical selection, kind of lining up with some of the stuff that we just heard folks talking about. What do you think? I mean, how about the Starman? Does that sound good?
Starman's pretty rad.
Excellent. Let's check out Starman.
Coffee.
Okay, and so that was Starman from 8-6, the 13th and final night, the pink glazed donuts with rainbow sprinkles, and just a killer Starman, which came out of Rise Come Together, which also, by the way, was really good, but I'll stop doing that. Because apparently I like them, like it all. Yeah, I trust that you enjoyed that, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, Starman was, I know we were both in Vegas last fall. Starman was one of the highlights of the Ziggy set for me. I thought it was one of the songs that they really did the best justice to. Love the fact that Mike was singing it. I think his voice is really, of the four of them, is perfect for singing that song, and he does a great job singing it. So if you want to keep talking about surprises, you know, I wondered what, if any, songs from the Ziggy set they would bring back. You know, maybe some of the songs are like a little bit too much of a hit single to throw into a Phish set. So the fact that they played Starman again, and you know, maybe we'll keep seeing that, and especially Moon Age Daydream. That was because the version that they played during the Baker's Dozen was ripping. And those songs sounded great without the background vocals and strings too. I mean, they really pulled it off with the small arrangement.
I agree on all counts. I'm still hoping that next time I see them, they play 5 years for me.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. Yes. All right. So before we get to our last question, let's go to our second set of haikus. So we'll transport back to the third floor of American Beauty and listen to Jonathan read a few more of those.
The plural of haiku is haiku.
Ah, you're right. You're right. I whiffed that.
I'm a monster. Sorry.
All right. Here are your haiku.
We have a few more of the Phish haiku.
Background
and if,
haikus.
If anybody else is listening to this at home, or anybody here, if you have more to submit to us, please do, because the tour's going on and we can read some more on another episode. This first one I want to read is kind of special. This is from a friend of the podcast, Matt, who is at The Real Burnham. And this is his Baker's Dozen pair of haiku that he sent. He writes, "I'm jealous of you with your donuts and big plans made for MSG. But I'm glad for me, for Couch Tour and additions of a baby girl." And Matt announced to us on Twitter yesterday that Lillian Jeanette was born yesterday, their new baby girl. So I want to say congratulations to Matt Burnham and best wishes to he and his family from all of us. So I got a couple more. This is from @SDShango. You might know him as Over Macho Grande on Twitter. "Just got a ticket for the fourth and fifth night. Commence midweek rage." We can all relate to that, probably. Then, good friend, @SynthFunk. "Crew was crunk as fuck. My friends are dancing machines. Wooks laying in the streets."
And that, I don't know if Art's here, but he's amazing, and he is so special. That's all.
And Art, if you are here, make sure you come up and say hi to me, because I have never met you in person. Anyways, I think he just sent that because he wanted me to say crunk out loud. @FishMeltsFaces sent this one in. A jam night promised. Type 2 sample opener. Where the hell is Steve? That's he also adds, that's dedicated to all the Steves in the struggle. But, yeah, I don't know. Saxon Strikeouts, Seth writes, where is he? Hey, oh, there he is. All right. Take a bow. This is still Lawn Boy? Skybridge felt like a spaceship. Cross-eyed, next level. I get that one. And I got a couple more real quick. The Wolf at Wolfenhaus writes, "Black Oleander, a 30-minute Lawn Boy that Paige likes to croon." And then we go back to @FishMeltsFaces. He sent this in this morning. So this is the most recent, hot off the presses. "Double chocolate, a chocolate torture, you sexy thing, you." And this is my last one. This is the last one. This is from Josh P. @JMP0375. "3 days of Phish bliss. It was just so damn much fun. Now back to real life." Yeah. Hey, it happens to all of us, and it will happen again to you. Watch out.
All right. Thank you very much once again, Jonathan, for compiling those, doing such an excellent reading. I feel like we should have had like somebody playing the bongos or something like that, just to kind of add a little bit of, you know, beatnik color or something like that to the poetry reading.
Full disclosure, I have read poetry in front of people before.
Ah, okay. Okay, there you go. Old pro.
Sorry.
All right, so for our third question, we wanted to know from our attendees, where does Phish go from here? And I thought this was a good question to ask. For me personally, I came away from the entire experience thinking that, you know what I mean? Like, they've accomplished this. What, this is definitely a new peak in the band's history. Does the tide kind of roll back a little bit? Are there shades of Big Cypress where they accomplish something so massive that then they struggle a little bit afterwards to feel like they can accomplish something like that? Or is this just a new jumping off point? So let's see what the folks that we talked to had to say about that.
They don't have to prove anything. They got their banner. They are permanently cemented in history.
And how cool is it that they're like, you know, 50, past middle age, I guess. They're almost old.
50, what, 52?
Yeah, yeah. But it's like they're the most comfortable they've been. And man, it just makes me really happy for them and happy for all of us because we get to experience it, so...
I'm not afraid to say it, but I was in tears for some of those shows, just straight tears.
We all in that building felt the emotion of them that last night. And when Trey and Paige got a little choked up there, I think we all kind of really collectively felt what was happening there. I think that they can only go up from here. I think it's really an emotional high. It has to be to have so many people. I mean, it, 2 weeks, you know, when the run started, it wasn't sold out. And a few days before that last weekend, tickets are on StubHub for an insane amount. Obviously, you know, that's a different conversation, but it just became crazy. It's got to be flattering that the whole city in New York, the biggest city in the country, people were losing their minds over Phish and the donuts and the themed nights and Boston Cream. It really was. The whole thing was a spectacle, and from start to finish. And I think it was really handled very, very well. And I think that they continue what they've been doing, maybe with a few changes here or there. You know, they introduced the Mexico run. They did this. I don't think this is going to be a thing. I don't think residencies are going to be a thing. I think they continue doing what they've been doing, maybe not as extreme, which we've already seen happen anyway. They're not doing massive tours. They're doing 20 to 30, you know, max 30 show tours, we'll say.
Mike has gone on record saying that Dick's is like his favorite place to play. So I really, I have hopes that, you know, Dick's is really going to be a massive, awesome blowout party. And they bring some of these crazy, silly songs like Strawberry Letter 23 to, mm-hmm. back to, you know, kind of give the folks who didn't get a chance to make it out to New York City a chance to experience these awesome moments from the run. But yeah, I don't really know. And another thing I don't know is like what the on the road again encore symbolizes or means. You know, I joking yeah. too, yeah. after that finished, I was, you know, yelling in my section, Baltor's back on, bitches. But since I haven't heard any announcements from
good, very optimistic view.
Which, yeah, right. Well, I just, you know, hearing rumors about New Year's Eve at MSG and there's no fall tour, what does on the road again mean?
Yeah. I think it's just the Dicks, right?
It meant something. Yeah, I guess that can be.
Or just like we're like they seemed sad and proud to be wrapping it up, you know?
Yeah. I you know, seeing and hearing them, you know, their voices crack and be crying, it's like just broke me.
Yeah.
Like this is such a special moment for them, and it's not being, you know, wasted on them either. You know, they aren't rock stars who like think this is normal. They are very, you know, feel very grateful and lucky, and, you know, don't take any of this for granted. And that's so awesome to see that, you know, they're humans too.
Some very good thoughts, and we'd like to thank Joseph, Zach, and Diana for joining us and sharing those with us.
Yes, and we have to give a shout out to our other guests on the live show who were with us at American Beauty that day. Jeff Carroll, Scott Marks, Stephen Olkner, Steve Vickner, Jackson Richards, and one more thank you to Tom Marshall for coming out and joining us.
Matt, before you went to that, you kind of frame the question well, and one of your one of the things you said was you referenced Big Cypress, and I actually thought about that very thing myself in the past week or so, and I think that, you know, it would be possible for them to fall into that same, you know, how can we go up from here, maybe we should call it after Big Cypress, except that they are they're older. They're more mature people. They know what happens when you reach that point and you decide, well, that's it. They know what happens. And I don't think they are in love with that. I think that at this point, they'll just move on to the next thing. And I think that the assertion, you know, Diana makes is that, you know, Dix is going to be a massive party. I think that's probably bang on. I think that it's kind of like, you know, the Halloween runs where they play an 11-1 show, and the 11-1 show is the big throwdown. You know, they've done the thing, and now the pressure's off, and they can just get down. And of course, we're always game to do that with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And Diana made a comment also about, you know, what does them playing on the road again mean? I mean, I really took that as a way of kind of calming down people who were concerned, like, well, maybe they're not going to tour anymore. Maybe it's just going to be MSG shows, or they're going to, you know, hunker down in one venue for a long time. Because the fact of the matter is, I mean, we had a lot of good times seeing them. I will wind up seeing less Fish shows this year than any year since 2.0. I mean, even if the rumored New Year's shows happen and I can make it to a couple of those, it's still going to put me at maybe 6 or 7 shows this year. And there's a lot of people I know who didn't get to see the band at all because they weren't going around. And, you know, maybe they're people that, you know, they're good to just kind of catch their local show each summer and not really travel. And so a lot of people were kind of cut out from that. But I took the playing of On the Road Again to mean, you know, okay, we did this, and now let's go back out there and let's come to your town and help you party down and get back to business as usual. I don't know. Did you agree with that?
Well, yeah. You know, interestingly though, I know a few people, who heard that song and thought the exact opposite. They saw the band was emotional on stage, and, you know, I couldn't see it from my seat, but they could see it on the webcast. And I think they just misread the situation. You know, I think they were emotional from the banner raising and that sensation of accomplishment. And that song has some really poignant words, you know, going down the road, playing music, you know, I can't quote it accurately, you know, we're the best of friends and playing music is all we want to do, or something. I'm paraphrasing badly, but you know, the point is that they love each other. They love doing what they do together, and they were celebrating it with that song. And yes, they're going to come back on, go on the road, and they're going to play more shows because, I mean, again, as I said, they know what happens if you decide to quit at a apparent peak. So I think that we'll be seeing more of them, and I'm really excited. And I think they were just happy and just celebrating that love that they have for one another and for us, because we are all amongst part of that band of gypsies traveling down the road.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, man, I mean, I feel like we've been talking about these shows for the past month, which we basically have been, it's kind of been an
pretty much
all-consuming thing in, you know, fishdom and in life and everything like that. It feels a little bittersweet, just like that encore to let it go. But I'm sure we'll probably come back to these shows repeatedly in terms of listening and discussing and analyzing. In fact, we might kind of revisit it relatively soon, right?
Yeah, I think we'll probably definitely be taking on one of those shows in a HF Pod Plus episode on our Patreon site.
Yeah, yeah, and just a little teaser for that. It's we've talked about a set that we want to play, and it's actually one of the sets that might be maybe slightly controversial, because I think there's mixed opinions about people thinking that it was either the best or worst second set.
It's a very songy first set. Don't trick people by telling them it's a second set. There's no jams. It's so y'all go figure that out.
Yeah, but so we've got one that I think is worth discussing. We'll do that on the HF Pod Plus coming up over the next couple of weeks, as Jonathan mentioned. And we've got some other very, very nice treats in terms of where does HF Pod go from here. There's some really super exciting things that are going to be happening over the course of the next month. So stay tuned for those.
Yeah. For example, Brad will join us. And RJ will be back. I don't really have any other good teasers for everybody.
We'll let them out of the basement where we have them trapped, and maybe let them rejoin the show again. No, of course, love to RJ and Brad, who are off,
Familying,
and happy 10th anniversary to RJ and his lovely wife, who are out celebrating that. And hopefully we'll have the gang all together pretty soon.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
We're all very busy men.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, should we go all out on that on the road again? I think it feels like a good way to wrap things up.
Yeah, let's do it. But before we do that, let me just remind everybody, because you probably don't know this at all, right? You can find us on Twitter at HFPod. You can find us on the interwebs at HFPod.com. You can email us at thehelpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com. I think that's right. And if it's not, too bad. You can find us on Facebook, if you Facebook still. And or you want to tell your grandmother how to find us. That's totally cool. And we'll be back soon with more cool stuff. So, yeah, let's go ahead and play the thing.
Awesome.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Jonathan. See you all soon. All right. Road again. Life I love is making music.
life I love.